Thankful for this opportunity to preach to you again. I appreciate your attention. If you'd like to go ahead and turn to the book of Psalms, let's continue our journey through the Psalms together. In a unique way, the Psalms contribute to the rest of the Holy Scriptures that we have. They help to shape our thinking in a way that is worth paying attention to and recognizing. Remember that the Psalms offer us rich and memorable substance, right? Remember the poetry and the way it flows together and the simplicity of some of its metaphor. It gives us substance so that we can hold these thoughts in our mind, that we can meditate and ruminate and draw meaning out of them as we go about our life, as we're riding in the car, as we're waiting in line, as we're going along. We can dwell on those things. It's like the cow. Remember, I'm going to keep bringing up the cow. He calls up the grass that he has eaten again to chew on it so he can get more of the meaning out of it, more of the nutrients, more of what he needs for life. A few weeks ago, we talked about how the Psalms give us a model for expressing ourselves to God. We talked about David and how David, in his joy and in his frustration, penned these Psalms, many of them. And it was how he took his feelings, whatever they were, and his thoughts, and he said, "Here, God, I'm going to give them to you, because if I go take them to the person that I want to express them to, I may do something that I shouldn't, something that I may regret later. And so I'm going to bring it to you, and I'm going to give my heart to you and allow you to work out things in your way." It submits what's going on inside of us to the plan of God. And so we meditate upon the Psalms, and we go to the Psalms when we want to express our deepest desires and fears and things that we deal with. This is a time-tested, a disciple-shaping and God-approved method for storing God's Word in our heart that we may not sin against Him. Verse 9 of Psalm 119, How does the young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. And notice here, he says, "With my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander from your commandments." You know, without the right perspective, we can sort of wander through Scripture and through the service that God has given us, and it can become maybe redundant at times. That's what I'd like to talk about today, is that fine line between knowing God and being familiar with God and going back to His time-tested and unchanging commandments, and yet not letting it become something that is redundant and repetitive and sort of just this static that goes on in our mind. But it is something that is familiar, and we find better application and fuller trust and a steady peace in God. There's a saying out there that says, "Not all who wander are lost." I think Moses was one of those. Moses did some wandering, didn't he? Moses wandered about the wilderness. He wandered about through life, and yet he certainly wasn't lost. Let's go to Psalm 90. Did you know that Moses wrote a psalm? He likely wrote more. We have some of his poetry in Deuteronomy. If he wrote more, then we don't have it saved for us here. But we do have this psalm, Psalm 90, a prayer of Moses, the man of God. Now think about Moses. Moses knew God for maybe a little less than 120 years. Moses was 120 years old when he died. Can you imagine knowing somebody for 120 years? Do you think you'd get tired of knowing that person? Often God had Moses doing the same thing over and over again. Now Moses did a lot of different things in his life, but for long stretches he was doing the same thing with the same people, preaching the same message over and over and over again. And yet Moses was able to take what was familiar to him, what he had known from infancy, and make it into something fresh and applicable. God was able to establish His work, His purpose through Moses. And so Psalm 90 maybe is a keyhole. It's a glimpse into how we can approach this. How did Moses turn what was familiar into something that was not changed, but newly applicable to his life? He didn't neglect or forget or take for granted what God had given to him. And so I want to go through Psalm 90 here. I want to first look at this analogy that Moses gives us about his relationship with God. He likens it to how he views his home, which a relationship that he's had for a long time. We'll talk about that analogy. We'll then go through and see how this mindset was with Moses throughout his entire life, how it shaped and gave purpose to what he did. And then we'll close with some thoughts on how we can apply this to our daily life. Psalm 90, verses 1 and 2. Lord, you have been our place, you have been our dwelling place, in all generations. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. Moses brings this analogy of a dwelling place. Maybe your version says, Lord, you have been our refuge in all generations. That's amazing, because Moses was sort of a homeless guy. He didn't really have one place to live, and yet he looks back and he says, God, you have been my home. Now let's think about this analogy of the home. If our home is truly a refuge, maybe it was when you were a child, maybe your home is a good and a safe place now. Many of you have a home that is a wonderful place. How often does your home change, really? You want it to stay the same, don't you? If you came home and people had disorganized your bills everywhere, maybe they're already disorganized, but they had thrown your bills all over the place and they'd moved your furniture around and they'd adjusted everything and they changed your clocks, would you say, all right, time for a little bit of change? No, you'd say, don't mess with my house. This is my one place where I can be comfortable. This is my one place where I can be safe. And so if our home is a refuge, if it's a safe place, we don't complain that it's static or that it's stagnant. We see it as a place of comfort and of safety and of support. Our home is where we begin our day, and it's where we end our day. And Moses looks back over his life and he said, God, I began my day with you, and I ended my day with you, and you have been the steady thing in my life. Maybe we can stretch this analogy to a relationship, because that's what we're getting at here is Moses' relationship with God, our relationship with God. Consider a friendship that is a refuge for you, a friendship where you can be yourself, where a friend helps you to be the best version of yourself, where you share your life with that person and you appreciate differences and you enjoy the activities that you do together. If that's the kind of friendship you're in, you don't call that friendship boring, do you? Boy, my friend has always been there and they're so dependable. They're just so boring. Is that what you say about a friendship like that? No, we cherish that friendship. We hold on to that and we hope that it never changes. And when it does change, when friends move, when families are pulled apart, it takes a piece of us with them, doesn't it? Exodus 33:11, you don't have to go there, but this is where the Bible gives us a glimpse into Moses' relationship with God. It says that Moses would sit down and talk as though face to face with God. There was a friendship there that never got old, that Moses was eager to go back to. He didn't complain that, God, you've just always been the same and you've never changed. He said, I need to go back to the one thing that doesn't change, that is everlasting, that stays the same. Perhaps the most intimate human refuge, human relationship, might be a marriage. Now, if we think about it in one aspect, it's the same person in the same home, doing the same thing, eating the same cereal every morning, right? Having the same likes. But if that is something that is wonderful, we think of that as a gift, not as something that is boring. It's somebody that we can count on, and we're familiar with them, and yet we're still growing closer together. They're predictable, and yet they're always maturing and growing into who God would have them to be. This is a marriage refuge relationship at its best. You try and outdo the other person in sacrifice, and yet you find them sacrificing just as much for you in return. You find yourself trying to outdo them in service and in submission, and yet you find them giving you the same thing back. In Isaiah 54, if you'd like to turn over there just briefly, this isn't specifically about Moses, but God puts the context of his relationship with us in the context of what a marriage ought to be. Isaiah 54, starting in verse 4, "Fear not, for you will not be ashamed. Be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced. For you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You will remember no more. For your Maker is your husband. The Lord of hosts is his name, and the Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. The God of the whole earth he is called. For the Lord has called you, like a wife deserted and grieved in spirit, like a wife of youth when she is cast off, says your God. For a brief moment I deserted you, but with great compassion I will gather you. In overflowing anger for a moment I hid my face from you, but with everlasting love I have compassion on you." How easy it is sometimes to take these things for granted. Even though we know how wonderful they can be, sometimes our home falls into neglect and disarray, and it gets messy. Sometimes our friendships, we don't have the time or the energy we would like to invest in them. Sometimes our marriage, we sort of treat like it's old hat, rather than it's like a something that is secure and protecting. And so what do you do with a neglected home? Well, you patch it up and you clear out the clutter. You make it fresh again. What do you do with a weak friendship? You pick up the phone and you create times to be together, and you go to efforts to talk and to communicate. What do you do with a static marriage? Well, you quit acting like you know the person as well as you think you do, and you pay careful attention. You pay more careful attention. You set any kind of distraction aside, whether it's the television or whether it's some kind of activity that you're caught up in doing. You put those things aside and you dedicate yourself. This is the analogy that I'd like to carry forward through the rest of our study of Psalm 90. That there are things to us that are familiar and sources of strength that we become closer to, and yet they're not always changing and jumbled up like the world is, and that we find security and purpose in these things. Let's take a look at Moses' life. Let's go back to Psalm 90, and I want to see here how God has established Moses' life, the purpose of his work. Moses, as he goes through Psalm 90 here, he realizes that he is insignificant in comparison to a God who is eternal. And he asks God to establish the work of his hands. Think about Moses' life. God was always his home and his place of refuge. When Moses was in that basket in the Nile, When he was floating along in that basket, God was his refuge. When he went on to the palaces of Pharaoh, God was his home. When he was in the outskirts of Midian, when he was tending flocks and no one knew who this guy was, God was with him. When he was in slavery in Egypt, God was his refuge. When he was spending the 40 years in the desert waiting for the disobedient generation to pass on, God was his refuge. Even when he was in that tent of meeting, conversing with God, he knew that God was his place of safety. It did not become old to him to know that he could always go back and begin and end his day with his God. Continue with me in verse 2. "Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever you had formed the earth and the world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You return man to dust and say, 'Return, O children of man, for 1,000 years in your sight are but as yesterday when it is past, or as a watch in the night.'" He writes about God's eternal nature on one hand, and then he converses that with the fact that he's a child of the dust. 120 years to know God seems like a long time, but in perspective of eternity, it's a drop in the bucket. And perhaps whenever Moses thought that I've known God for a long time and I know all of His commandments, he would remind himself, I'm a child of the dust. How can a mortal being ever fully comprehend who God is? Maybe that's the way we freshen up our friendships, as we think, even as long as I have known this person, there's more to learn and to know about them. It's arrogant to think that we can ever fully know everything about somebody, much less about God. And he humbles himself in the reality that God is from everlasting to everlasting. From vanishing point to vanishing point. Moses looks back in the past and he thinks back as far as he can to his earliest memories. He thinks back to when history was barely being recorded and it grows dim, and he knows that God is far beyond that. And then he turns around and he looks forward and he strains until he has exhausted his imagination and his comprehension in the future. And he says, God is even beyond that. His friendship, his relationship with God was never so familiar that he couldn't go back and grow deeper in his relationship. Come down with me to verse 14. Think about what Moses had to go through. And yet he's able to write this. Satisfy us in the morning with your steadfast love, that we may rejoice and be glad all of our days. Boy, Moses had a tough job trying to shepherd those people through the desert. He was preaching the same message to the same people who never really seemed to understand it. And he even got so frustrated one time that he took responsibility for what God had given him to do. And because of these people, he didn't get to go into the promised land. Think about what kind of song Moses could have written, what kind of psalm he could have written if his frustration had collapsed in on him. And yet, what does he say? Is he bitter toward God? Verse 14, no. He says, I am satisfied with your steadfast love. I am satisfied with what you have done for me. God takes Moses' work and his life, and he turns it into something that is powerful. It is the work of changing people's souls and making a difference in their life. And notice how he ends the psalm in verse 17. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us and establish the work of our hands upon us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Moses' life is scattered into all of these little pieces that we went through from in the Nile to out in the desert to in the palaces of Egypt. All of these little scattered things, and yet God takes all of that and he puts it into something and he establishes it as significant. But notice the repetition here. He says, establish the work of our hands. He's established Moses' life, but then not only that, he takes Moses' life and he connects it with the rest of Scripture and the rest of history. He connects it with our life. He has established Moses' work and his ministry with what we are doing today. He takes a little part and he establishes that and he connects it with the greater picture. So I'd like to close today with two thoughts for application. Two things that can help us to keep the familiar from becoming something that is just redundant. Let's go to verses 5 and 6. Moses was motivated by his own mortality, by the fact that he was human and not God. Verse 5, you sweep them away like a flood. They are like a dream, like grass that is renewed in the morning. In the morning it flourishes and is renewed. In the evening it fades and withers. You know, sometimes we get to thinking that life is just going to go on, and yet like a dream, it can be over before we realize. Sometimes we think life is really, really good and we have everything going for us, but like grass, it can quickly go from flourishing to turning brown and passing away. And so what does he ask for? Verse 12, teach us to number our days that we may get a heart of wisdom. In the anxiousness of today's world, we are wise to meditate on our lives and our days long and often before the face of God and on the edge of eternity. So perhaps, in effect, this is the question that Moses would ask himself when he would get up and he would go about his work. If today is my last day, if I'm numbering my days and today is my last day, am I doing what God would have me to do? If today is my last day, am I doing what God would have me to do? Sometimes we can answer that question and say, yes, yes, I am doing what God would have me to do. Some days we ask that question and we answer, I'm not really sure, but I'm going to keep on trying. But if for too many days in a row, the answer to that question is, no, I'm not, then we can make a choice there to continue going on passively with just the way things are, or we can make a decision to change in light of the fact that that our days are limited. So Moses was aware of his own mortality, and he kept that in his mind. If today is my last day, is this what God would have me to do? And finally, I'd like to close with verses 8 and 9. He realizes that an infinite God, that an eternal God, knows everything that is going on in his life. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. For all our days pass away under your wrath. We bring our years to an end like a sigh. The years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. Who considers the power of your anger and your wrath according to the fear of you? You know, Moses witnessed people who lost track of the fact that God is an eternal God. He witnessed people who grew tired of knowing a familiar God, who stopped paying attention, who stopped growing. To them, God had become old, and his word had lost its meaning, and the work that they were about had become mundane and boring. They knew God's power and his eternal nature, and yet they ignored it. And they may have thought that they could hide this attitude from others. They may have even been able to hide this attitude from themselves, but they could not hide it from God. Nothing is hidden from God. And Moses understood this. He knew that if ever he got to the place to where God seemed like he wasn't doing anything and his word had no meaning for him, Moses turned to himself and asked, am I still growing? Am I still changing? Am I still finding new application for the things that God has given to me? May the knowledge that God is eternal not be wasted upon us. May we never stop growing. When familiarity clouds our devotion to God, when God's word becomes static, and when we tire of the old truths, we must first ask if we're the ones who have stopped growing. And so we come to God with the frequency of an old friend. We serve God and we sacrifice with the diligence that a loving spouse would serve and sacrifice with. We seek the refuge of God as we would seek the comfort of our own home. And yet, in light of the fact that we serve an eternal God, we simultaneously tremble and rejoice, knowing that our God is from everlasting to everlasting. If today maybe you have lost sight of what God is doing in your life, if you need direction in making his word fresh again, in finding new service for your hands, in finding new application, then don't let a day go by. Come forward and talk with somebody and let's take care of that. If you're to the place to where you want to know God, you want to enter into the family of God and call God your father and call Christ your brother, to make the people here your brethren, then we can help you with that. You can come forward when we sing our last song and you can get that help. I pray that you have the blessings of God, that he will never be so familiar to you that you grow tired of him, but that you will find comfort in who he is and what he is doing in your life. Let's all stand and sing together.